Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and have another wonderful guest with me today. She said that I could just call her Barb, but Barbara White is my wonderful guest for today, and we're going to get into her story and whatever other items that we happen to come across, then we'll see if we get to those. But I usually kind of start things off with just giving a little quick rundown of my background. I started in Kenpo in the early to mid 90s. Since then, I have trained in capoeira, hapkido, taekwondo, boxing, and I've recently started in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai. So I stay pretty busy, and so now that I've got this podcast and got to speak with the many wonderful martial arts folks, now we'll get into your story. And we're gonna take it back to the beginning. When did Kenpo find you? When did the martial arts find you? And how did it all start for you?
First of all, Reggie, thank you for your patience and kind of dealing with my time schedule and the constraints and everything, and for inviting me to be on your show. So I appreciate the invite, and I thank you for this. Martial arts started about 34 years ago, and it was a lot of people have different reasons for starting my martial arts. Mine was simply I saw a studio next to the dry cleaners that I dropped my clothes off of and decided to go in and enroll. So it was a purely an impulsive move that I have not ever regretted to this day. It was a wonderful experience. I always liked watching Kung Fu and you know, shows like that, but had never really entertained the thought of investing in martial arts until that day when I, for some reason I still don't know, decided to enroll in a little studio that was next to the dry cleaners. It was a Japanese studio. And from there I couldn't get enough of it. So that's how my journey began.
Very nice. I find it interesting, and that's one of the reasons why I say how martial arts found you versus you finding martial arts, is that a lot of people, they get in because they were bullied, or they watched movies and wanted to emulate those things, and it sounds like you weren't really in either of those camps, and it just called to you and said, yeah, you gotta get started. So, I do like that.
I think deep down inside, you know, if I was to really kind of consider it, which I actually have before, it was something that gave me an inner strength, I guess, and maybe I didn't know it at the time, but it started providing me with some self-confidence and some inner strength, and so I think maybe deep down I needed that without knowing that I did need that, and this was an open door, and I'm really thankful that I went through this open door, because from there I've had such a wonderful life and wonderful experiences, and I've gained family, friends, and you know, sometimes we see a door that's open, we don't walk through it. We never know what we may have missed. And then sometimes that door is open and we go right through it, and it changes our life and opens up so many wonderful experiences that we would never know that we could have. You know, it just blessed my life in every way possible.
Now, with this this first school, what style, was it a Kenpo school or?
No, it was a Japanese-based school, and he didn't last for very long. In fact, probably less than a year. And then the person who bought out his school was Kenpo-based. He had a kind of a Chinese and a Kenpo background, and so I just stayed with that school. And that's when Kempo started.
Okay. Now, was there a big kind of shock in kind of changing systems, or were you able to kind of follow in?
Well, I could follow in because I hadn't been in the other system for long enough to have it really form permanent habits. And there's so many similarities anyway between, you know, Kempo is so eclectic. So, I think you see, you know, certainly they didn't have checks and it's hard style, which I really love the Japanese style. I really, it's so beautiful. But no, it didn't take me too long at all. I was still fresh into it. So I had everything to learn.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, do you know the specific style that it was, or?
It was this guy who was a Shotokan background. He called his name was Jin, so he just called his school Jente Do, which means way of Jin. Do means the way and hands, and so that's what.
Gotcha. It kind of reminds me of I believe a few of my previous guests have kind of had a similar story, but I believe it was Rich Hale that was saying something about. It's either Rich Hale or Tommy Burks, and somebody was saying that someone that got them into Kempo is like, oh, well, you should come in and learn, Ed Parker's karate, you know, Ed's karate, and thinking like, I'm gonna learn karate from some guy named Ed. Like, this sounds kind of funny, but it kind of reminds me of that. So. And so can you kind of talk about what your kind of early experiences, so you know, now well, that you've gotten
sure.
your in Kempo and kind of what was those early classes like? And
well, yeah, I mean, it's the school that I took over, the first school, also did not last that long, maybe a year or so, maybe. And from there, I went to another school. I mean, I ended up kind of on a journey of a few different schools just because they didn't stay open. But it was just the fact that it was such a passion for me. It's just I couldn't get enough of it. So I would read about martial arts and different aspects of martial arts and try to work on speed and power and technique. And so it's just a, you know, I think it was a journey through different studios that eventually led me to Bob White's Karate Studio, probably about 5 or 6 years later. And that was just like the perfect studio for me. And later on, met my husband, married him, and we just haven't had a wonderful life together. And this school has been my family for many years now.
Gotcha. Now, before you got to Mr. White's school, you were building up this interest in martial arts. Was there a particular thing that was drawing you into it, a particular, you know, whether it be competing or fighting, or what do you think was driving that interest?
Well, I liked all aspects of it. I love basics and building a foundation, a strong foundation. I really truly loved it. I loved how going from a neutral bow to a forward bow, you can feel that power and that drive. The balance, coordination. I loved all those aspects and I really loved to see what I was capable of doing. I was a runner, I swam in college and, you know, lifted weights and stuff like that. But I hadn't really ever done anything that bike ride and stuff, but nothing that involved a lot of, you know, coordination and skill per se. And so what I was attracted to was seeing what I was actually capable of doing with kicks and punches and strikes. And then the when sparring, that was, I just absolutely loved that. It was so fun. And, you know, it took me a little while to really appreciate forms. But I did. Now I absolutely love forms. So it's kind of a, you know, different aspects along the way that drew me to it. But I think most of all was just being able to see what we're capable of as far as producing beauty and power in our movement.
Gotcha. Okay. So what were the, you went after you started with Mr. White, you know, kind of what were those early classes, early training like?
You know, I think one of the other than just improving my skill and my basics and everything, when I was a brown belt, I started teaching, and that really is such a great thing to be able to develop a relationship with students, your students, and share what you love. And I think I really started developing my own style when I started teaching, and things that I pulled into my classes. I never teach without focus pads. I love hitting and striking and techniques with focus pads and forms with focus pads and flow drills and things like that. So I started to kind of find my own identity, I guess, not, you know, identity as far as my martial arts is concerned. So, you know, we study the system, but, you know, it's basically, we have our own thumbprint in it. And so I started discovering that, and I think it's so refreshing and rewarding to see, to have a student and be able to connect and be able to share and to help them have a passion and their own unique style of their karate. So, and plus the relationships formed with our family at the studio. That's really, now I've kind of sort of lost the train of thought as far as your actual question is concerned, but I'm just telling you how it went as I progressed along the martial arts.
Yeah, I like it. Was teaching kind of always something that you were interested in, or did it kind of come later on in your training?
Oh no, not at all. I was asked to start teaching a Saturday class, and I was like deathly afraid because it was kids' class, and so, you know, I said we have to, in order to grow, we have to get out of our comfort zone, and that was like completely out of my comfort zone. So, you know, I started teaching. You know, I would practice how to articulate. That's how nervous I was to start teaching kids, and then I started getting more comfortable with it, and the kids' class grew, and I started doing privates, and it became just something that I would do then. But as far as being interested in teaching immediately, not at all.
That's kind of interesting. For me, I've haven't done much teaching in the way of a Kenpo, but I taught and still try to when I can teach capoeira for a lot of years, and I was always very interested in getting into there. So I always find it funny when I talk to people and they're like, oh no, I didn't like it or wasn't interested in doing it, and then there's that shift, and you really come to fall in love with it, and it's really, I guess, empowering, uplifting, inspiring to work with people, and you see the students when they grow and they have those aha moments when they're maybe struggling with something, and then they get that moment where they're like, oh, okay, now I understand it. And I've always just been a big get a lot of enjoyment out of just seeing the growth of the students.
Well, you know, in reality, you know, a black belt is a teacher, and a teacher is somebody who, is in service to others. And, you know, I've always been kind of very quiet. And, you know, different journeys, you know, your journey throughout martial arts, you open up different aspects of yourself that you didn't know that you had. And teaching was one of them. I had absolutely no idea I could be a good teacher. I hadn't even thought about it. I was just, I would really enjoy training with friends, and, you know, I enjoyed the competitive aspect of it, but never knew that I could really teach. And so this is just another wonderful thing that martial arts has brought to my life, not only the family that I have, the friends, but the fact that I can connect with other people and articulate and encourage and just be a part of their experience. I don't take it lightly. I consider that it's a gift and a blessing, and I am so grateful for the experience that I've been able to have through martial arts. You know, I truly thank the Lord every day for this and the life that He has given me, because it has been such a wonderful life. It still is.
Excellent. So in your teaching style, kind of what things have changed over the years in your teaching, maybe things that you do now that you didn't do before, or things that you wish you would have done back then? Kind of how's that changed?
I don't know if it's necessarily really changed, Reggie. I think it's just developed. And so I'm not sure I would have changed anything from the beginning through now. I think that it, I have a comfortability with it. So I allow myself to adapt. And, you know, with each student that we have, you need to adapt to that student and the way they know, the way that they learn, and adapt your style to them. So I think it's, you know, I think if anything, it's helped me to open my eyes to the way other people might learn and do my best to be the best for them.
So for someone, I guess someone kind of like myself that is newer to teaching or new to teaching, what advice would you give for a new instructor?
You know, there's a saying that that my husband always said, and it is so true, that nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And just having a sincere interest and a desire to be of service to that other student or to your student, I think that that's what it is just really caring about them and caring about the progress. Always being on time and you know, suiting up and showing up and knowing and learning what style works best or how they best learn. With somebody who's brand new, I'll ask if they've had any martial arts background or any kind of athletic background at all. And I learned this from my husband. You try to relate to whatever background they may have had to what they're learning that day.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. All right. So we're going to move over to competing. Have you done much competing or?
I did do, I loved it. Actually, I did do some, not every single week and not a ton. I started as a color belt at, I was at the IKC. You know, I have two kids and so I, and a full-time career, so competing would be with the studio and fitting that in. But I just truly enjoyed. I learned a lot from competing. I learned composure, and you know, Bob always said, "Emotion is the enemy." So just to kind of plan your fight and fight your plan, as he would say, as well. And so you know, you learn about yourself through competing as well. And so I did enjoy it a lot. There's, I had some breakthrough moments that I remember so clearly, and So it's, if you don't learn about yourself from competing, then you've lost that opportunity. So it was wonderful. I think the last time I did was several years ago on a black belt team at the IKC. I still spar. We just had a sparring. We had sparring on Monday night. We still spar on the mat at the studio.
Mm-hmm. And from when you started, that was that something that you were interested in, kind of from the beginning, or did you have to warm up to it?
No, I always liked sparring. It was so fun. It is fun. That's something I immediately loved.
I agree. I've only done a handful of tournaments myself, and I'm pretty sure I got disqualified on every one. So went to a lot of open tournaments, and the rule sets are always a little bit different, and always had trouble falling in line with things like that. Usually the kind of giving headshots were I guess my kryptonite, and it's like, oh well, we're not allowed to do that, hit to the head or something on this particular tournament, and I would just kind of keep forgetting and get the muscle memory, and couple shots in, and it's like, well, I guess I'm going home now. So I've dabbled with the idea of maybe getting back into it these days. Particularly, I wanted to get into doing forms in a tournament. I never did that when I was competing. So I'd like to kind of give that a try and see how that goes.
What forms would you do?
I am a big fan of book set, and I realize that a lot of American Kenpo schools don't do that anymore. So I started at a Chinese Kenpo school. It was essentially the Tracy's curriculum, and book set and Tiger and Crane were kind of my favorites. But I was not yet high enough belt to learn those forms at the time. So I was never really interested in using one of the other forms to compete with. So I probably could have done well with something like a short three or long three, but just never got around to it. So,
well, it's never too late to start.
Yeah, like I said, I've been thinking about it and kind of toying with the idea, but now that I'm doing so much stuff, I'm not sure I need something else on my plate to do, but I don't know, we'll see. I get inspired when I get to talk to guests and they tell me about their competing days and things like that, and it does give me some interest in doing it. So it may happen. It may still happen. So when you were competing, did you compete in forms as well, or was it just
all
just
fighting?
Sparring?
No. All fighting, no forms.
Just no interest in it, or it just didn't happen to go that way, or.
No, I just like to do the sparring aspect of it, and I have no excuse and no reason why I didn't do the forums. I just didn't. Perhaps it would have been good for me to do it, but I never well, did. I don't necessarily regret not doing it. I just competed in the fighting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, like me, there's still time. So
yes, I know. Thank you. Thank you for the kickback.
you did kind of mention being into forms, and kind of jumped the gun here for my lightning round here, but which forms were you the biggest fan of?
yeah, there's aspects of forums that I really love, like long form too. I really love that, the transition, the forward bows and neutral bows and those strikes and the power and the broken rhythm that you can have in long form too. I really love it. Short three, of course, is such a cool form, all off grabs, and it's dynamic. Long form three, I like all the forms. Long form three, I love it because it's kind of shows all the full spectrum of angles and the power that you can get through long form three. Form four is, I mean, I love all the forms, especially when I'm teaching form four, just the twist dances and transitions. You've got to increase your skill level, balance and coordination. And it's form five. I really like form five. I like the takedowns and the stomps in form five, and it's just great. I can't say that I'm a real big fan of form six, mm-hmm. basically because I haven't really applied it and spent a lot of time with it. I like form seven because it's using your extension of your natural weapons into clubs, and it's really, I had started form seven, never really hit a baseball bat or baseball, and didn't have that great of mastery of hitting with clubs. And then I started banging them around on the heavy bags and getting power through the striking. With then I began to appreciate form seven and putting that to motion. So there's aspects of all the forms that are really, I love long form one because you just establish and go into that strong forward bow and cancellation. And so I can't say that I have a favorite per se. I have aspects of all the forms I truly appreciate and love, and try to work my own style into them. So.
Very nice, very nice. So, have you done any kind of cross training with other systems, or it's
yeah, I have all... actually. I'm learning some jiu-jitsu, which I think is just the coolest thing, and we're adding that to our school. Ron Sanchez is working with me on self-defense jiu-jitsu, and I'm doing it for the women's self-defense class that I have on Tuesdays. And I really find just absolutely love it. So, and he's also has a class for the kids on Wednesdays, and they learn the rolls, the falls, tactical stand-ups, sweeps, and chokes. I love that aspect of it. So I am cross-training, to answer your question, and getting I'm getting more comfortable with it, and getting out of a guard and getting out of a different situations, a mount, and I love learning that and adding it to our school.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, when I got started, I didn't. So when I got started in the 90s, and the first UFC came out, and the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu just kind of turned the martial arts world on its head, I guess both literally and figuratively. Everybody was just really like, man, what is this thing that he's doing? And we used to kind of get together after class and try and kind of pretend like we knew what we were doing. We had a friend that was training jiu-jitsu mm-hmm. with the Machados, and he would come in and kind of show us a few things, and we would kind of roll around and try and kind of figure it out. And I never really had much interest in actually training it myself. I feel that it's important to be able to work in all the different ranges and have all these various things in your toolbox, but it just never really jumped out at me. I like kicking and punching people, so it took some time getting deeper into Kenpo and other arts that I've trained to start to gain a different kind of appreciation for jujitsu and then also the school and the people that you train with makes a huge difference. So the school that I'm at now, I started at a few months ago, and just kind of right away connecting with the people and getting that family together just really gave me much more of an interest in the training. And then now looking at everything with that Kenpo mind, and I try and apply the various Kenpo principles when I'm, you know, doing jiu-jitsu, and I think that's really helped, and I'm much more of a fan of it now, and looking forward to hitting the class as much as I can, and they've even convinced me to come for the 6 a.m. class, so I'm gonna try and get myself up for that tomorrow. So,
oh, that's great. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Good for you. That's really great. You know, when it comes to self-defense, you know, if a lot of times women are on the ground or end up on the ground. So I think it's really important to add that aspect for purely self-defense, self-defense movement. So I think it's an asset, and I'm loving it.
Nice.
You know, when it comes to cross training, not to interrupt you, but you know, there's so many opportunities to get out there and learn from other martial artists, their perspectives and the things that they teach. You know, we have our seminar to benefit Royal Family Kids coming up here on March 22nd. We've got such a great lineup of teachers, and we're going to be able to cross train and learn from them. So, you know, and if you show up to seminars, like I'll be going to Ireland this year for Eddie Downey's as well, and then for John Sepulveda's in July. When you get a chance to go to some of these camps and these seminars, you have the opportunity to cross train and learn from other people. We at our seminar, we've got Lee Wedlake coming out, and of course, John Sepulveda, who's been there for every event that we've had, and Ron Sanchez, who's also been there for every event that we've had to teach, and George Ryan, and Greg Lelliott, and we have Paul Dye, we have Sean and Rebecca Knight, we have so many great great teachers that you know, it's just a really great opportunity to learn.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I like that. You know, there's so many people that we can learn from, and there's so much out there that to get kind of stuck in this little bubble of a certain, you know, techniques or certain systems. But I think it's important to get that perspective and that knowledge from all the different sources that you can, and not limit yourself to just one setup.
Well, you know, that analogy that Ed Parker uses in the Infinite Insights, in I think it's book one, and it's the guy that's excuse me, at the bottom of the well, and all he sees is the sky above him. But now there's so many opportunities that are out there to look past the top of the sky and really branch out and meet friends and learn things that you wouldn't be able to learn if you did not go to some of these opportunities.
Gotcha. So I'm curious, now with the popularity of MMA and things like that these days, what is your kind of take on, I guess one on MMA and your feelings about, I guess, maybe today's generations getting away from kind of the more, I guess, art aspect of the martial arts and in Kenpo. And I feel that a lot of the MMA is kind of more focused on I guess, the showboating and getting away from, I guess, that humbleness and respect. And I kind of liken it to the to like Karate Kid and the original Karate Kid, and there was this respect and this
well, let me just
inner
have
peace
to,
and
no, I understand. I think it, you know, I don't actually like to watch it anymore. I hate it when they're, you know, they've submitted somebody and they're just hitting. And it's almost as though they've, you know, lost their ability to see clearly that this this person is unconscious, and the judge has to break it up. And the profanity and things like that. So I don't really watch it anymore. I just think we have to stick with what we know and teach integrity and respect and character in our classes, and keep our side good. And what, not much you can do about MMA and how, you know, it attracts certain some demographics, but you know, we've got a beautiful family worldwide in Kenpo and other forms of martial arts. So, you know, I don't really give MMA too much thought.
What would you like to see for the kind of the future of Kenpo? Where maybe do you see it heading? Where would you like to see it heading? And maybe how have things changed in that are maybe things that we're not doing now that we used to do that maybe you'd like to see make a comeback or?
You know, I think kind of sort of maybe a I think that there's a lot more. You know, I stay out of the politics, to be honest with you. I'm not on Facebook that much. I don't see a lot of stuff that goes on. I'm pretty busy myself. You know, I have a full-time career up at Hogue Hospital as a nurse, and I go from there to the studio and teach, and have been learning the aspects of running the studio. And so I don't live in a bubble, but I just don't get involved in any type of argument and things of that nature. What I see is when I go to the camps and say for our tournament seminars coming up and the place I've been able to go, I see that there's a lot of unity, and I like that. And I think that if anything, we could all work on being more inclusive with one another, and knowing that we have a bond in Kenpo, and if there's certain disagreements about certain things, just to you know, that's the old way they used to do it way back, is agree to disagree and not have any type of more heated disagreements, so or hate with one another, you know. I think if anything, we just continue to try to keep our side of the street clean and hope that influences others. And you know, the bottom line is be grateful for what we have. And we have a wonderful system. We have many friends and many opportunities.
Very nice. I like it. All right, so we're going to go ahead and move into our lightning round here. Got a few little questions to throw at you, and then we'll head towards wrapping up here. Okay. First question being, do you have a favorite technique?
I love the yellow belt card, because a yellow belt card teaches you so much, and everything in the yellow belt card is it can take you to all the other cards that are techniques that we have. I really like Meal of Compulsion, and the reason why I like that, that's the What If Backbreaker, and that's to me that shows that maybe something may not work and you've got to think on your feet and be flexible. I love Glancing Salute because it's got those traps and those locks in there. I just think it's so cool. That's one of my more favorite techniques. I love Taming the Mace because you get to slam somebody against a pole. And you show you get some power in there. So there's different kind of techniques. I love Flashing Mace because you push off your quads as you go right into that ribs, and Palm Strike. And you have your circular technique as you do the looping overhead. And I love circular movements and twists. So I can name a whole bunch, but our time is short. So those are kind of a few that I thought off at the top of my head.
No, those are great choices. I like those. So very good, very good. We kind of touched on this before, but we'll kind of lock it down a little bit here. So do you have a favorite form and or set?
Okay, so I talked about the forms. So my favorite form, well, let's go with form five. It's all right. Takedowns.
Nice, nice. I like it. And then how about a set?
With a coordination set.
Oh, good one. Good one. I like it. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
A weapon? Well, if I was going to have to use a weapon, well, I always have my keychain with me, which is a Kubaton.
Oh, nice, nice.
In fact, my black belt form included the Kubaton.
Oh, but you know, very nice.
Anything in our hand when we're out there is a weapon, so we want to be familiar with our water bottle and an ink pen and a pencil and all these things that are at our disposal to use as weapons.
Very true, very true, very true. I like it. I like it. All right, last question. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
Well, living or dead?
Correct. Living or dead, fictional or non-fictional.
And they've got to be martial artists?
No.
It would be, no. It'd be my husband.
Anyone ever.
My mm-hmm. husband, of course.
Very nice, very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, now we are at our point for shameless self-promotion, so you can plug anything that you want, or if there's anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to make sure to get out there, now is your time. You have the floor.
Sure.
And then we'll close out from there.
Sure. I'll do a couple promotions that we have that are coming up. First of all, we have our event for Royal Family Kids coming up March 22nd. I kind of briefly went over that. We have such an opportunity to train with these guys. You know, it's March 22nd. It's at our studio. It benefits Royal Family Kids. And if you're not familiar with Royal Family Kids, it's an organization that we've been involved with since, I don't know, about 2006. And it's for kids who have been, that are in the system, the social service system, for some reason, neglect, abuse, an unsafe situation at home. So a lot of them are in group homes and foster care. And they provide a camp. It's throughout the world now, but we support the camp that's up in Pinecrest. And it allows kids to experience a 1 week of unconditional love. And so it's a very well organized camp. And we support this through our seminars at Royal Family, for Royal Family, and it's at our studio. It's $75, and you get a whole day of seminars from these amazing people. I've been doing some shout outs on Facebook, highlighting our teachers. I have been was a nurse at the camp for many, many years and also ran a karate program. And it was so great to be up there. I was there last year after a couple years break due to COVID and my husband and everything. But just to see these kids who come to camp kind of, you know, nervous, and you sort of see that the things that a fear and things of that nature, and then kind of this camp goes, you just see these laughing, smiling faces, and see what camp does for them. And it's a wonderful thing to see how the camp experience can change their lives. So so we have our seminar supporting that. We also, with the Women's Symposium, we didn't even talk about that, but the International Camp of Women, we have a symposium that we've been doing, started in 2014 at the Live IKC, when Steve Cooper asked me to put a live symposium on, and we did that. It was wonderful and great panel of women. And then COVID hit, and right at COVID hit, we started doing Zooms, and we now have a great team of women. We have Denise Plowman, whom you've already interviewed, that does our social aspects and kind of runs things, and Heather Flessing, who you've already interviewed. And just a great team of women and ambassadors. We have the symposium that's coming up April 6th. And this one will be working with some form of disability. And so we have a great group of teachers lined up for that. We have Christy Anderson through Ultimate Karate, Diane McRae, who's up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and works with disabled people. And we have Ken Kellogg, who's right here in Costa Mesa and has worked with disabled students as well. And that's coming up via Zoom. So you'll start to see, I'll be doing some shout outs on Facebook about that. And Heather's putting together a video, so you'll see that coming up, but it's all Zoom. So those are the two things that we have coming up right around the corner. In May, I'm going to put a shout out to Ed Downey's European Kempo Camp, which is just it's just a premier camp up at a 5-star hotel, and it's people from all over, and it's one of the most fantastic events. And that'll be I think it's May 23rd, that weekend. That's coming up. So for all those out there who are listening, go on his Facebook page and check out the camp, and hopefully we'll see you up there in May. John Sepulveda then is around the corner in the summer, and I had the opportunity to be there last year and was asked to be one of the teachers. It was so wonderful. So I hope to have our studio and go up there this year and support. So there's a lot of great things that are coming up that are basically around the corner. So that's my self-promotion. And that's other promotion, myself and other people's promotion.
Very nice. I like it. I will make sure that links for all of those things are in the show notes, and make sure that this episode gets out in time for everybody to know about that. So, I thank you so much for taking the time to tell me about your journey and your story, and look forward to everything that you're doing. And we'll definitely have to do this again and get into more specific parts of your story. But yes, I just thank you again so much for being on.
Well, thank you. You have a wonderful Sunday. And again, thank you for the invite.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkempo.com. Thank you.